You are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 65, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. This is Tom Harrison, Chicago, Illinois. Welcome to the show. So big news out of Hollywood this week, folks. Yeah, as I was getting ready to record the show, it was announced that the villain for the new Thor movie has been announced. And I'm kind of excited about this because it's somebody who I really like playing a character who I really like. And of course, I am speaking of Christopher Eccleston, none other than the ninth Doctor Who himself, who will be playing the part of Malekith the Accursed. All I can say is I hope that Walt Simonson is getting big royalties for this, because they have borrowed so much from Walt Simonson for the movie franchise so far. And I hope, indeed, that they'll continue to do something. Maybe we'll even get a Thor Frog movie at some point, though I rather doubt that. So I admit to having a little bit of a twinge when I first heard this, a little bit of twinge of doubt. We all know how difficult it can be to actually faithfully reproduce a comic book experience in a movie form. But the more I've thought about this, the more I realize that I think Christopher Eccleston is probably one of the very few living actors today who could actually pull off the character of Malekith and not make it seem completely cornball. He definitely has the look for it, and that's going to be really important to making that character believable. There aren't a lot of actors out there, at least popular ones that are known, that would be able to carry off that look. And I think that you might find somebody like Daniel Craig could do it, but I think he's probably far beyond the budget of this Thor movie. Now, despite my enthusiasm here about the idea of Malekith appearing in Thor 2, I really hope that they do an original story. I don't want them to go copying what they did with Malekith's first appearance, and you had this guy Roger running around and rubbing glass in his eye and all that stuff. I would rather not see that story played out. I would rather see something wholly original using these characters, something that's more mythological than what Thor the first one was. I mean, the last thing I want to see here is people eating Big Macs and changing into yellow dust. This really kind of, to me, defeats the purpose, unless you're going to go through this whole thing of Thor going to hell to rescue those souls. You know, I don't think that that is going to be a real good idea for the movie, but I guess we'll find out. And as more stuff comes out about the movie and about the castings and so forth, we do have confirmations that most of the cast for the first movie is coming back. So hopefully, you know, it'll still work out and everybody will be back. A lot has been said about the new director for Thor 2, Alan Taylor, mostly because he's known for doing Game of Thrones, which is the current popular thing to like. So I think that, you know, he may bring this organic sense to it. And I think that would be welcome. You remember how we've been talking about on the show here about the Simonson run as compared to the Lee Kirby stuff, and how Asgard is very science fiction-y, very hyper-futuristic. And we saw a little bit of that in the first Thor movie, particularly with that big swirly Bifrost gadget thing. And maybe having it be more like a Viking village would be an interesting way to go on this. I wouldn't want to contradict Thor 1 too much, but it would be really interesting to see if this new director can take it something like that in that direction, give it more of a fairy tale quality rather than a sci-fi quality. And I think that Malekith would work quite well in that structure. So I guess we'll see what's going on as we hear more about it. And of course, as the movie's coming out at the end of 2013, we don't really have all that long to wait, do we? So it's actually kind of good. Anyway, I do have a couple of stories to go through. This is going to be one of those shorter episodes that I talked to you about last time, but not too short. So anyway, here we go with our reviews.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar.
And this week we're going to start out by reviewing Thor number 369. Has a July of 1986 cover date, retailed for 75 cents. And on this issue is the Marvel's 25th anniversary banner. Yeah, I think that's the first time we've seen this one. Cover is by Walt Simonson, and it shows bearded Thor in heated battle with none other than Baldur the Brave. No commentary necessary, not even a cover blurb. So we open up to the splash page where we have the title of the story, For Whom the Bells Troll. Haha, very clever. And of course we have the credits here. Walt Simonson wrote the issue. Sal Buscema penciled it. Jeff Isherwood was the inker. We'll talk about him a little bit in a sec. John Workman Jr. was the letterer. Max Scheel, colorist. Ralph Macchio was the editor. And Jim Shooter was the editor-in-chief. Now, just a few words on the inker Jeff Isherwood, because this is the first time we've encountered him. Jeff Isherwood is still involved in comics today. He was born in 1960, came to Marvel about 1983, did a lot of work on things like Daredevil and Doctor Strange and the Silver Surfer, but he's probably best known as being the regular inker over on Conan the Barbarian. So that was where I think he really made his name at Marvel. Now, he did a few other little bits and pieces here and there, including this Thor issue, but he's not really a name that you would generally identify with Thor. He's still active in comics today, still doing some independent type stuff. So, yeah, he's still out there, and we'll talk a little bit more about its inking style after we talk about the actual issue. So here on the splash page, we pick up where we left off last episode, where we have Thor being shown into this floating palace by the three maidens. And we have the one who's dressed as Circe from the Eternals, and we have the other one who's wearing this sort of weird half-cat suit thing. And then we have the red-haired woman in the slinky green dress. And she's basically identifying herself to Thor. She's saying she's called Un. This is the woman with the green dress who talks like Jane Foster. And then we have Gertha and Kossi. And Gertha is the one with the Circe outfit. Kossi is the one who looks like Saturn Girl. And so she's like, we seldom get visitors here in the castle, and never such a handsome one. Your great hammer proclaims that you must be the son of noble Odin. None other than Thor, the thunder god himself. Will you not sit yourself down at the table and share the simple repast? And there's this big, huge spread on the table of, looks like turkey and ham and fruit and bread and what looks suspiciously like a bowl of mashed potatoes. It's like Thanksgiving, actually. The way to the castle is long, and those who travel here are usually weary from their journey. My thanks, lovely ladies. In truth, I am somewhat fatigued. He's reckoning that his fatigue is really more due to the fact that he was wearing his belt of strength and he's not really recovered from that yet. One of the women brings him this, a glass of wine, and he's kind of thinking to himself that he's not so tired that he doesn't realize that there's sorcery all over this castle, and he particularly thinks that this cup of wine is really reeking of sorcery. And he's like, oh, you know, my thanks, ladies, but I quenched my thirst before I arrived. And he's like, but tell me, have you seen aught of a noble silver-haired warrior I seek news of? And as he says that, his seat flies up into the air, very, very suddenly up into the air. And he's like, by the golden spires of Asgard. And seat is, it's like an ejector seat heading up to the stone ceiling. And he's like, what ails this chair? In another moment, I shall be crushed against the stone. But I am no powerless victim drugged with drink. And Mjolnir, the hammer of Thor, shall greet the ceiling for me. And he raises his hammer up and smashes through the ceiling. And then he realizes these women are up to no good. An unseemly trick to play upon a guest, but I deem that tricks are the better part of the feast in this castle. Now, my ladies, let us speak more plainly. And they start screaming for Anar, who we remember as Baldur.
Anar, Anar, help! A madman threatens us!
And he shows up and he's dressed in the, complete head-to-toe armor. Actually, pretty cool-looking armor. It's a lot different from the armor he was wearing when he arrived here. And he's got his big square shield and a sword. And who dares threaten the ladies of Anar? And Thor turns around and faces him. And the two of them are scrapping. And he swipes at Thor with his sword. But Thor picks up the bowl of mashed potatoes and throws it at him. So why do that when you can actually throw your hammer at? I don't know. Anyway. So, So he throws the mashed potatoes at him, and he hits the shield, and Thor says, his shield parried the missile at the speed of light. Yeah, well, it's mashed potatoes. It's not very aerodynamic. Surely nobody moves so quickly in all of Asgard, save only Hermod and Baldur himself. Yet Hermod is in the Golden City. Is it possible I have found my missing comrade, only to perish beneath his merciless blade? If this is truly Baldur, he has been captured by the sorceries of this cursed place, and means to fight to the death. And of course, Thor is saying all of this out loud, so Baldur slash Anar can actually hear him. But even Baldur cannot fight without solid footing, and he takes his hammer and smashes the floor, and pieces of rock fall, and it knocks off Baldur's helmet, and he sees that it is, in fact, Baldur. Baldur, my comrade, how can I break the spell that binds you? He notices that Baldur is wearing the necklace and the belt and the ring. You remember those? Those are what the ladies put on him, and it caused him to lose his memory of being Baldur. And Thor reasons that this is probably what he needs to get rid of. So he's like, three witches and three tokens. Perhaps this is where the answer lies. Mighty though I am no match for Baldur's speed, and my hands will never be able to wrest these treasures from him. But though I bow to Baldur in speed and grace, I bow to no one, friend or foe, in power. And he bangs his hammer on the floor, summons lightning and thunder. We haven't seen him do that in a while. That's kind of interesting, because I think Simonson didn't like that power all that much. And there's the lightning coming down, and he says, come forth and answer the sorceries of this place. Strike the tokens he wears, and he directs the lightning at the belt and the necklace, and blasts them off Baldur, and Baldur gets thrown back. And Thor's like, it is done. He is freed. I shall hold these beauties till we see what powers they possess. But may the Norn strike me dead if I have harmed my oldest friend. And he grabs the belt and the necklace. He's holding them in his hand, at least. And Baldur's regaining consciousness, and he recognizes Thor now. So we realize that the spell's broken. He's like, Baldur, are you all right? Oh, Thor, is that you? I feel as though I have just awakened, and yet perchance I dream, for I see a beard where I formerly saw a chin. Then you are indeed awake. The beard is new, and it is real. I will explain later. And you? I remember this castle now, and these sorceresses. They gave me gifts of thanks for saving their lives, and caused me to forget not only my honor, but all that I hold dear. And Baldur's like, how dare you do this to me? What manner of creatures are you that you would strip a man of his memory, and keep him the power of pleasure, though he knew it not? And the girls are kind of cozying up to him, and they're like, handsome Baldur, be not angry with us. We have lived here for so long, alone and lonely, that we cannot help but love thee. Is there any woman anywhere who would blame us for wanting to keep the gift that the gods had sent us? Will you not forgive us for the sake of the love we bear thee? And Thor's like, in truth, the three of you are prettier than any maids Thor has seen in all of his roaming across the nine worlds. And they're thinking to themselves, well, maybe there's still a chance that they can control these gods. Thor, I would be glad if I could bring thee pleasure, Lord. And Thor's like, Gertha, thou art as delicate as the dove that flies across the morning meadows. And I learned from a lady called Lorelei never to trust a drink or an appearance. And he grabs the ring off of this woman. This is the one dressed as Cersei. And she glows and says, Gack! And Thor's like, if indeed there's magic in this ring, perhaps it will disrupt the sorceries of the ladies. And Red Hair Girl is like, we're discovered! Gertha has forgotten herself and resumes her true appearance! And the three of them turn out to be evil troll hags. And these hideous old, well, they're troll hags, and they're hideous.
And let the game end now! Death! Death to the Asgardians! Come, my pretties! Let us embrace each of you in turn.
And Baldur's like, troll hags, deadliest of that underground race. Who would have looked for them here in the sky? And Thor pitches his hammer at one of them, and it smacks her with a gerthunk. And they're like, Gertha!
Quickly, Cussy, slay Baldur, and I shall kill Thor before his thrice-accursed hammer returns to his hand.
And it's like, what, Baldur? Have thou lost the taste for my kisses? And he's like, perfidious demon, only through stealth and magic have you won your victories, and now you have lost both. And Mjolnir returns to Thor's hand, and he's getting ready to smack one of the troll hags again.
Another moment, Thunderer, and you'll join your father in oblivion. You have nowhere to run, Baldur. This castle shall be your tomb.
And Baldur says, I am surprised to find troll hags from the depths of the earth, living here amongst the light of the sky. Light is usually a troll's bane. Have you seen the sun close up? And he uses his sun boy powers that he got in the Baldur the Brave miniseries here for the first time. And he starts to glow, and the troll hag falls back and is going, "Arg!" And Thor is surprised by this because he didn't know that Baldur could do this. And the troll hags are falling back. He's like, it hurts, oh, make him stop. You shrink before the light, but do not turn to stone as do your weaker cousins. Your troll magic is strong indeed. And Thor is thinking, as is yours, friend Baldur, for I have never seen this trick before. But now is the moment to settle these demons who prey upon the innocent passers-by. And this part he says out loud. So it's just all of a sudden out of nowhere, Thor shouts, let the floor of the castle be rent asunder! And he smashes through the floor with his hammer, and the floor is falling out beneath them, and they're like, oh, help me! I cannot keep my balance! Ooh! And the troll women are falling through the floor, and they fall to their death. And Thor's gloating up at the top in the castle still, saying, so perish the slayers of innocence, the enemies of Asgard. May the castle now become a haven of peace. And Baldur says, but is peace always to be bought at the cost of life, Thor? Surely the fates have bound us to the web of tragedy. I'll shed no tears for a troll hag, says Thor. Yet amidst the sorcery, I stand before a puzzle. You did not seek to slay the hags, and that is Baldur's way. But I have known Baldur better than a brother, and never have I seen him play such a trick with light. It's something new, Thor. I learned it when I met the Frost Giants. We've already explained that. They liked it no better than the trolls. And Thor's like, yeah, so I would imagine. 'Tis a fine trick, but perhaps not so pleasing to the eye as the beard you sport. Have you decided to look more like the Thor of mortal legends? And we then cut back to Earth. And remember, we left Thug Thatcher hopping into a taxi cab and driving away from the prison. And this brings us to, not very far from where I'm sitting, the suburbs of Chicago. And it's one of these streets that's lined with identical homes. And I have this woman, and she's making dinner, and she's got twin boys out in the yard playing ball. And she's calling them in for dinner, and they go, ah, Mom, be sure you wash up before you come to the table. What would your daddy think if he saw all that stuff all over the rug?
Oh, Mom, it's all Jeff's stuff.
Liar, Bill was playing Africa Corps again.
I don't care whose stuff it is. It better be all cleaned up before you eat.
And the kids run into the house, and we learn that this is Ruby, who was the red-haired moll that Thug Thatcher had way back in Journey into Mystery. And she hears the voice coming from the backyard. Nice kids you got there, Ruby. Real nice. Glad to see you done okay for yourself where I was away. And she's like, who are you? Now don't close that door too fast, Ruby. We wouldn't want to startle the neighbors, now would we?
Who are you, mister? What do you want?
Just a chat for old time's sake. Why don't you send the kids to their room, Ruby? They got some cleaning up to do, don't they?
You boys better run along and straighten up your stuff. Supper will be ready directly.
You're not being very friendly, Ruby. We was more than friends once. Thug Thatcher and you was a lot more than friends.
Get your hands off me!
And she has a spatula in her hand, and he whacks him across the face with it. If you've got something to say, say it and get out, or I'm calling the cops.
You dumb broad. I ain't taking no lip from my ex-moll.
You're crazy!
And he pulls a gun on her, and he's like, I don't believe it, but I can see it in your eyes. You don't really remember me, do you?
This is more of Thor's dirty work. He ruins my life, sends me to prison, and takes away my girl's memory. Well, he's going to live to regret it, because I know the magic words. Jane Foster.
Uh-oh.
And you're going to help me, honey, or those two boys of yours will be needing iron lungs.
And we then cut back to Asgard and the castle in the sky, and Thor and Baldur have left the castle, and they're down below it. Thor's saying, 'Tis time we were away. The Golden Realm has awaited her new ruler long enough, and her king would never have returned but for the son of Odin himself. My thanks, Thor, and my apologies. I fear my victory over the Frost Giants was a too heady a brew. I should never have sought one last adventure. Ah, 'tis no less than anyone about to take up the shackles of government might have done, Baldur.
And the tokens?
What say they return to Asgard and be given to Ulrich the Warlock for safekeeping?
I thought Ulrich the Warlock is dead. I don't know, is he just kind of pulling that name out of a hat? I thought that Loki had done away with him. Anyway.
A wise decision, my friend. Let us delay our departures no longer, but take to the open road in haste.
I pray you, noble sirs, stay thy going but a moment longer.
And the old woman who directed them to the castle is here. Remember her from last issue? 'Tis the old peddler woman, whose wiles brought us to this castle originally. Yeah, because they have to state the obvious. You'll find no victims to gloat over this time, mother. The troll magic is undone.
Not all of it, good sirs, for I am as much a victim of it as you yourselves. Long have I awaited deliverance, but bound as I was to the troll hags, I could not speak. I could only send brave men to their doom and stand mute. For once I was as fair as these false forms of the troll hags, and they could not forgive me for it. But they are no more, and if you but pluck yonder flower, the final spell shall be broken, and I shall be free forever.
And Thor's like, more sorcery, I'll warrant. And he reaches down and he grabs the flower and he smashes it. And he's like,
oh.
And the old woman changes into a gorgeous babe. He's like, I myself at last. Oh, my gracious lords, I thank thee both. Would that I could embrace thee together to express the joy in my soul. My lord Thor, may I not return to Asgard with you and the lord Baldur? My home is long since vanished, and I have nowhere to turn. And Baldur is a little bit suspicious of this, because the castle is still flying above the clouds, even though the spell has been broken. Now, I'm no expert in troll magic or anything, but it would seem to me that a floating castle, among all the other weird things we have in Asgard, wouldn't really seem like that big a deal. But, you know, I have to trust what Baldur thinks, I suppose. And she's like, please, my lord. And Baldur's thinking, could this mean that perhaps the final spell of troll magic is yet to be undone after all? And he reaches for the ring. Remember the ring that Thor put on the beautiful woman to make her turn back into a hag? And he slips it on her finger surreptitiously, and she screams, no! And Thor's like, Baldur, what have you done? And she changes into this giant pink and magenta monstrosity. And this is what I thought was a female dire wraith. I don't know why I thought that, because it kind of looks like one, but it really isn't. Anyway, this is Ugletha, and Thor's like, a troll mother, greater than any I've ever seen. Yeah, so I guess I was wrong about that. I think we have at last pierced the final enchantment, as her treacherous blade was about to pierce your heart. Yeah, she's carrying this tiny little sword, and she's like, grrrg! So Baldur and Thor start to fight her, and he's like, beware, Baldur, she strikes without mercy. Fear not, she shall not touch me.
You are still doomed. Though the ring has undone my shape, I have not forgotten who my enemies are. Ugletha needs no weapons to kill two godlings.
And Thor says, could you fulfill these empty boasts? The enemies of the gods would sing your praises indeed. And he whacks her good with his hammer. And you hear crack. And she goes, argh!
I shall shatter your bones and suck the marrow dry, wretched Asgardian. And we shall see if mine are empty boasts. And she's huge. compared to
these two. And Thor's like, do your worst, mother of evil. Thor stands his ground, and she tackles them with a giant kaloomph.
The two of you have slain my husband and my daughters. I warned them that Baldur the Brave was no one to trifle with, and that he should be slain the same as all the other heroes who entered the castle gates to be seduced by the beauty within. But no, they were not content with that. But they would have kept him for themselves. They must disobey their mother and play the games of love with the slayer of their father, as though they were merely mortals themselves.
And they're rolling around fighting while she's talking.
Fools! But still they were my daughters, and they shall be avenged. First you and then Baldur shall fall before a mother's fury.
Her great bulk pins my arms, he says out loud. I must gird myself for the supreme effort before it is too late.
Now you die, Thunderer.
And then all of a sudden there's a big glow, and she's like,
thy eyes, the burning light.
And it's Baldur doing a sun boy bit, and she's reeling from the light the way the women did. Baldur's brilliance hath blinded her. This is the moment when my strength shall free me from her gargantuan body. And he manages to break loose, and he whirls his hammer around and says, now there shall be an end to this madness. Let the hammer of Thor bring down the house of Ugletha. And he whips his hammer at the castle, and it strikes the castle from underneath. And with a giant Car wash! The castle collapses and falls right down on top of Aglitha as she's regaining her vision. It's like, at last I can see again. Now where the... What? No! And she's smashed by mountain and castle, all the just falling down on her, going smoosh. Very much like a level of Angry Birds. And Thor's like, there was no other way, Baldur. The foes of Asgard are as implacable as the march of time. And Baldur's like, I know, Thor. Would that it were not so. But it has ever been, and so shall it ever be. Tell me, Thor, are you sorry that you are not riding home to become the liege lord of Asgard? That is the question, Baldur, I've been asking myself since I first proposed your name to the great Althing. If I had taken the throne, I would have had to have given up adventures such as this. I doubt if I could have stood it. And Baldur's amused by this. Is, I rode wide-eyed into that honey trap of a castle because I was sorry to give up such things, says Baldur. But after this, I think perhaps being king would not be such a bad idea. I might make less of a fool of myself. Or perhaps only a different kind of fool, says Thor. Indeed. But no doubt you will show me which knife to use at state banquets. And the two of them go riding off, galloping into the sunset, the giant pink sunset that we have here. And Thor's like, it is good to see you again, Baldur. What say we have that drink for Scourge? Yeah, remember they mentioned that a couple of times. The last one through the great gate of Asgard shall pay for it. I accept. Let us ride. And the two of them go riding off. And we have the next issue blurb here. Next issue. The gentleman's name is Zaniac. That sounds ominous.
So that, as they say, is that. And that is Thor number 369. So what can we say about this issue? Well, I was really encouraged by the first part of the story last episode. And really was enjoying this whole sort of fairy tale idea. This idea of the floating castle and the women. And you kind of knew that the women were no good anyway to begin. So it wasn't supposed to be that much of a shock. And we've seen that story 1,000 times before. In fairy tales, Brothers Grimm, in Norse mythology, in comics, and elsewhere. Now, Simonson does try to put a little bit of a twist on it with the old woman. The old woman, you know, perhaps in a fairy tale would have turned out to be, you know, the beautiful princess. And the hero would have married her. In this case, it turns out to be, you know, a hag disguised as a beautiful woman disguised as a hag, you know. And so you kind of try to throw that little thing in there. But it still kind of comes across to me as cliche. And overall, probably not Simonson's best effort, though it's not too bad. It's actually a pretty good story overall. What can I say about the artwork? Okay, well, we have Sal Buscema, who you all know I'm not a huge fan of. The art looks pretty good. Most of that has to do with the inker. And the inker, of course, is Jeff Isherwood, who we talked about a little bit earlier. Now, I have to say a couple things about Jeff Isherwood's inks is that he's a very heavy inker. And on somebody like Sal Buscema, that's actually probably a good thing. His inking style reminds me in kind of equal parts of Ernie Chan and Klaus Janson. And both of which, of course, were very active at Marvel during this period of time. Now, Ernie Chan, of course, would have been one that Jeff Isherwood was very familiar with, being a longtime inker of Conan over the pencils of Sal Buscema's brother, John. In addition to the Ernie Chan and Klaus Janson influence, which I think are the strongest, I also see a bit of Tony DeZuniga in there as well. And of course, Tom Palmer, I see a bit of his style in there as well. So it seems to me that Jeff Isherwood is kind of drawing his inking style from various other sources around the Marvel Universe. And I have to say, if you can make Sal Buscema's pencils look good, then you're doing a decent job. And I think he does a decent job here. All right, so I think it's time to move along. And we have a very special little surprise here for you because we actually have one of these rare Thor stories that was not published by Marvel Comics. And this is a story called The Hammer of Thor. And it was the third story in Batman number 127, which has a cover date of October of 1959. Cover art is by Kurt Swan, inked by Stan Kay, and shows a very mythological, big, burly, red-bearded figure wearing sort of golden helmet with little wings on it. It looks a lot like Thor's helmet in the Marvel Comics, I have to say. And a purple cape and sort of a gold breastplate and a purple skirt. I tell you, it doesn't look like a kilt. It actually looks like a skirt. And he's got these sort of lace-up Hercules booties. And he's surrounded by this sort of greenish glow, which reminds me a lot of how green kryptonite was portrayed in these 1950s and 60s DC comics. And you have to keep in mind, this is very much in the days when the Hercules movies were huge. We're really literally right smack in the middle of the sword and sandals movie explosion of the late 50s. So we have a lot of that going on. And this character of Thor is hurling a hammer of sorts. I guess it looks kind of like a hammer, and knocking over a light pole with it in front of Batman and Robin. And Batman is pushing Robin out of the way so he doesn't get smashed by this. And the guy's saying, "You dare to defy Thor, the Thunder God? Let this be a warning." Now, there's actually three Batman stories in this issue, but we're only going to cover the third one because the first one has to do with Alfred dressing up as a superhero called the Eagle, and it's very silly. And then the second story is about, well, it's kind of a what-if story, and it's sort of what if Bruce Wayne had not become Batman, his parents hadn't been killed, and it involves the emergence in Gotham City of this evil villain called the Blue Bat, who just by coincidence dresses identically to the way Batman dresses. And Superman is in the story, blah, blah, blah. It's not very interesting, so we're not going to talk about that one either. So anyway, so we have the story. It's called The Hammer of Thor. And the splash shows this character we saw on the cover, Thor, and he's holding Robin over his head and shaking him, it looks like. He says, "Rash mortals, how dare you intrude when the gods speak together? You shall feel the wrath of Thor." And of course, we have the credits here. It says Bob Kane. Well, we know that Bob Kane didn't draw a lot of these old stories. In fact, if you take a look at this issue and you have three separate stories in this issue, none of them really have the same art style, but all of them are signed Bob Kane. So you know that there's different artists working on this strip. Now, to find out the truth about the artist of this, we actually go to Mike's Amazing World of DC Comics, which has all of that information. The writer of the story was Bill Finger, and the artist was Sheldon Moldoff. I have a caption here. "He first appeared in a thunderstorm, and when he spoke, his voice was like thunder, for he proclaimed himself to be Thor, the Thunder God. Yet Thor existed only in mythology. So who is this fantastic figure who stalked the streets of Gotham City?" Batman and Robin learned the surprising answer when they finally solved the mystery of the Hammer of Thor. And the story opens up with Batman and Robin driving around the streets of Gotham City in the Batmobile during a thunderstorm. And Batman is like, "Quite a thunderstorm tonight, Robin."
"Batman, over there, do you see what I see?"
"Why, he's dressed like an ancient Norseman."
"He's big, isn't he? Gosh, look at the way he glows."
Yeah, he's got this green kryptonite-type glow all around him. And he looks like he's breaking into the National Bank of something or other. And as Batman and Robin approach, he says, "Stand aside, rash mortals, for I am Thor, the Thunder God. Beware my thunderbolt hammer." And they're like, "What?" And he throws his hammer, smashes against the bank door, smashes it to bits. Mallet returns to the giant Thor's hand, and Robin states the obvious.
"Batman, it flew back to his hand. Did you see?"
"I see a crook trying to trick us with some gimmicked up hammer. Let's grab him. You tackle him low, I'll hit him high." And they try that, but Thor doesn't budge. And Robin's like,
"It's like slamming into a stone wall."
"My punch, it didn't even shake him."
But Thor just swipes out with his hand, smacks Batman across the head, knocks Robin aside like a rag doll, and he's, "Puny mortals." And 5 minutes later, when Batman and Robin kind of regain their faculties, they see Thor running off with bags of money. And Batman's like, "Quick, to the Batmobile. We've got to overtake him." And the Batmobile starts chasing him, but Thor turns and he throws his hammer and, like on the cover, smashes into a light pole, which falls over and forces Batman and Robin to stop. And I would love to have Robin say, "Holy hammers," but that doesn't happen here. So Robin says,
"I've always thought Thor was a part of mythology, but after what I saw tonight..."
"No, Robin, I won't believe it. It can't be true. It can't."
And we see the next day the newspaper headline and ask the question, "Has Thor come to life?" And Batman and Robin are meeting with Commissioner Gordon in his office. And the commissioner's like,
"Batman, this is Dr. Henry Meek. He saw the drawing of the hammer and recognized it as one stolen from him."
I run a small museum of replicas of mythological curios. This morning I noticed the hammer was missing from my exhibit.
These little nerdly guys, your stereotypical museum curator from 1959. And so Batman and Robin go with the curator to his museum, and you see, replicas of various mythological things. You have Robin Hood's longbow, Alexander's sword, Merlin's magic hat, etc., etc. And there's an empty space here with, nails for, the hammer to rest in, and a big sign that says the Hammer of Thor, and Batman's pointing at it, and he's saying, "Is this where the hammer hung?" And I have to tell you, folks, this is why he is considered the world's greatest detective. He just doesn't miss a trick. And Professor Meek says,
"Yes, it's my prize exhibit. Batman, do you suppose it could really be the Hammer of Thor, lost for centuries, and now Thor has returned to claim it?"
And right here, the scene shifts to two nights later. And again, we have Batman and Robin. They're standing on top of some buildings in Gotham City during a thunderstorm, which really seems like an unsafe idea, if you ask me. And Robin's like, "No sign of Thor yet."
"The last two nights were clear. Remember, Thor was the thunder god. I've a hunch he'll reappear where there's a thunderstorm, like tonight."
And nearby we see a couple safe crackers trying to break into a safe at an electronics plant, which is kind of odd. And Thor comes up behind them and he says, "Wicked mortals, how dare you take the wealth that rightly belongs to Thor?"
"Huh? It's that guy we read about in the papers. Plug him."
Ha ha ha, get it? They're an electronics factory. Plug him. Very funny. And he takes his fist and he doesn't even need to use the hammer. He just takes his fist and throws these two guys aside. He says, "Fools, to defy the power of Thor." But not before one of the crooks gets a shot off and misses. But Batman and Robin hear the gunshot and they come to investigate. Robin's like,
"It's Thor again. He must have surprised those crooks, knocked them out. And now he's emptying the safe."
"We've got to stop him, Robin. Or at least try."
And Batman takes these coils of copper tubing, which just happened to be laying there in this plant. And he says, "Maybe this will pinion his arms long enough for me to think of a way of subduing him." But Thor is very easily able to break through these copper tubing. Batman thinks, "Only one chance now. Start the overhead trolley so that this machine will slam into him. Because of Thor's tremendous strength, it won't hurt him, but it may knock him out." And so the trolley starts rolling towards Thor. Thor takes his hammer and hurls it at the trolley, and it's going to knock it down over onto these two crooks that are lying right under it. Thor's like, "My thunderbolt will destroy that which threatens Thor." And Batman says, "Great Scott, the hammer will smash the overhead trolley, and those crooks are lying right under that machine." And so Batman and Robin leap forward, and they rescue the two crooks, and Thor has made his escape. And Batman, being the world's greatest detective, notices that and says, "Thor's gone. No use trying to chase after him. Let's turn these thugs over to the police." And the following night, they're back in the museum, and they're trying to get out more information out of Professor Meek.
"The weatherman predicts another thunderstorm tonight, and that means Thor again. Mr. Meek, think back to when you last saw that hammer. Maybe you can remember something that might give us a clue."
"I've been trying to think. I do remember something. Yes, I remember now. It was thundering that night, and I remember seeing something hurtling through a window."
It shows him in his museum and the thunderstorm, and it's a kitchen window with curtains on it, like frilly curtains on it. And a meteorite comes crashing into the window and hits the hammer. He says,
"A meteorite. It hit the head of the hammer and exploded."
And then he notices that the hammer is glowing.
He says, "That meteorite, it caused the hammer to glow. I wonder why. I must examine it."
And he reaches for the hammer.
Says, "And I don't remember anything after that. Listen, it's starting to thunder. Look, lightning."
"Mr. Meek, what's wrong with him, Batman? Look at his eyes. It's as if he's hypnotized."
"Wait, Robin. Leave him alone. Let's watch him. This may be the answer to the whole mystery."
So they decide to watch Mr. Meek, see what he does, and he seems like he's in some sort of weird trance, and he wanders over to an area of the floor, and he opens up a trap door there. Robin notices,
"Batman, look, it's the stolen money, and Thor's hammer."
"Yes, and now Meek is starting to take out the Thor costume, but he can't be Thor, not that thin little man." But I guess he picks up the hammer and he changes, much like Dr. Don Blake, into Thor. And apparently all he has to do is touch the clothes. He doesn't have to actually put them on because he's dressed as Thor in a second later. Great, Scott, it's incredible. He's starting to grow. He's becoming Thor. And there's a thunder crash, and Thor says, I hear your voice, O mighty Odin. I obey you. I go now to find more wealth with which to build a temple to your memory. And Batman states the obvious here. He thinks that thunder is the voice of Odin. And he notices that Batman and Robin are standing there. Says, rash mortals, how dare you intrude when the gods speak together? Now you shall feel the wrath of Thor. And he grabs Robin and is throwing Robin and Batman around. But Batman picks his shield off the wall and hurls it with all his strength. And it didn't hurt him, but it knocks his hand away from Robin, basically. So Thor swipes at Batman and smacks him a good one. It says, mortal, you dared strike Thor, the Thunder God. And he raises his hammer to strike Batman with it. He says, no mortal may strike Thor and live. My thunderbolt shall avenge me. Batman's thinking, he's going to throw the hammer. This fuse box behind me. And he throws the hammer at Batman, but Batman dodges it pretty easily, and this hammer goes smashing into the fuse box, and the giant crashes, and the hammer drops to the floor, and it's no longer glowing. And Batman thinks, just what I thought would happen. The electric current short-circuited the magnetic power of the hammer.
Batman, look! Meek is shrinking back to his normal size.
Yes, by holding the hammer, he got his powers. And now that the hammer's gone, he's becoming himself again. And so, so he's back being to Mr. Meek again. And the clothes are apparently absorbed into his body because they don't seem to be anywhere around now. And Batman relates the story of what happened to Meek. And his guess is, in its long journey through space, cosmic forces gave that meteorite strange powers that transmitted to the hammer. And from the hammer to you. That's why the hammer always returned only to you.
And because it began in a thunderstorm, I thought I was the Thunder God.
Exactly. Every time it thundered, you thought the thunder was speaking to you. And like a man under hypnosis, you never remembered what you did under its influence.
Oh, Batman, how can I ever pay for the damage I did with the hammer?
Well, there was a big reward for those safecrackers you caught as Thor, so the reward will take care of that. Everything will be all right now.
Yeah, so he's not responsible for anything he did as Thor. And, of course, that doesn't answer any of the questions of the story, but hey. And then cut to the next day at the museum, and the museum is crowded with people coming to see the hammer.
Like, Batman, all the newspaper stories have brought a crowd to my museum. Everybody wants to see the hammer. My little museum will prosper.
Yes, the hammer of Thor still has power, the power to interest people, and that's the best kind of power.
And that is the end. All right, so what's to say about this piece of shit? Well, actually, it's not all that bad. I mean, I'm being kind of hard on it because it is very, very hokey. But let's remember, the story is very much a product of its time. This is the pre-Marvel age. This is 1959. This is before we started to get into a more realistic type of storytelling. And of course, this could be a lot worse, though I don't really see how much worse it can get. We already have a story that makes absolutely no sense, either in the mechanism of how Mr. Meek becomes Thor, how he changes back, how this meteorite affected this hammer to be able to create clothing and to increase the size of Mr. Meek. I mean, they say it's a strange magical power, and that's pretty much where it has to sit. What happens after the adventure is over? I mean, there's a lot of things that don't make sense, and I don't think that the writers really cared. They're thinking this is a story that is going to be read by an 8 to 10 year old and then probably never picked up again, so they don't really think of it. But if you think that if this really happened in real life, people wouldn't be coming to a museum to look at this hammer. The police would have taken it away as evidence because it was used in the commission of a crime. Mr. Meek would be in jail. And I don't think that Batman's expert testimony would necessarily be enough to keep Mr. Meek from being responsible for paying for all the legal fees from the bank and repairing those big iron doors that he smashed, returning the money or whatever. So, there's a lot of questions that just wouldn't fly today in the world of comics. But 1959, that's okay. But there's still these really enormous leaps of logic, and we see this in DC Comics all through the 50s and 60s. And even at the time, basically, when we're covering these Lee Kirby issues of Thor now, 1967, 1968, there was still some of this hokey, really outlandish, you know, complicated mysteries that you could never possibly figure out the solution to. That sort of thing is still going on over at DC Comics. And I think with examples like this, you kind of understand why Marvel was able to surpass DC so easily back in the 1960s, when DC was still writing essentially for the same audiences that they were writing for in 1959. Now, all that aside, I really think this is a charming little story. It obviously doesn't make a lot of sense, but again, like I said, they really weren't going for that. They were really just going for sheer fun and entertainment, and there certainly is a place for that in comics. Look at some of the better fun comics today, like Tiny Titans, and you're going to find a whole lot of stuff that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I think that that isn't any barrier to, you know, having people enjoy your story if you don't think about it too much. I mentioned the artwork kind of briefly earlier, but I have to say Sheldon Moldoff does a really good Bob Kane imitation. And there are three different artists in this issue, and the three different stories are drawn in three different styles. Like I said, they're all signed Bob Kane. But I think that of the three of them, this particular story looks as though it was drawn by Bob Kane, whereas the other ones are clearly drawn by someone else. And so I think that that's, you know, pretty good here. But again, like we were saying about the story earlier, this type of art style, this type of comic book artwork is something that was completely passé just, you know, 5 or 6 years later in the 1960s. This stuff here looks like it could have come out of a golden age comic from the 30s or 40s. We got some pretty cool advertisements here in this issue, and I think I mentioned before that I really like looking at the advertisements in these old comics because it's really interesting some of the stuff that they sell. Even up into the 60s, you had some really bizarre stuff being advertised. Inside front cover, we have a record your voice at home kit. We have to remember, this is before cassette tape. So this is actually a device that you hook up to your record player that allows you to cut records. And it costs $6.98. And you can make your own records. Wow. Below that, you can get a real mobile tank, only over 6 feet long, for only $4.98. It's large enough for two kids, but can be handled by one. I imagine that's just a couple pieces of cardboard, but you know, they never tell you that. I mean, it always looks better in the comic book than it would in real life. We have natural color photos of your favorite stars, which is interesting because they say they're natural color photos, but they actually show a paintbrush in the ad. So it kind of implies that, you know, they're painted. But anyway, just listen to some of these great stars that you can get free for the asking. Now, it's interesting is that, you know, the photos are free, but the shipping and handling costs are not free. So you have to send 10 cents shipping and handling for each photo. But we have such stars as James Arness, Ward Bond, Pat Boone, Richard Boone, Ronnie Burns, Raymond Burr, Perry Como, Tim Considine, Tony Curtis, Doris Day, James Dean, Jimmy Dean, Eddie Fisher, Scott Forbes, Jack Kelly, Phyllis Kirk, Tommy Kirk, Tennessee, Ernie Ford, The Four Aces, The Four Lads, Annette Funicello, James Garner, Darlene Gillespie, Robert Horton, Rock Hudson, Tab Hunter, Will Hutchins, Ephraim Zimbalist, Roger Smith, Peter Brown, Richie Valens, Jerry Lee Lewis, Sophia Loren, Guy Madison, Sal Mineo, David Nelson, Ricky Nelson, Hugh O'Brien, Tony Perkins, Elvis Presley, Wade Preston, John Provost, Debbie Reynolds, Dale Robertson, Jimmy Rogers, Tommy Sands, John Saxon, David Stolry, Gail Storm, Clint Walker, Guy Williams, Natalie Wood, Loretta Young, Jane Mansfield, Everly Brothers, Peter Lawford, George Nader, Chuck Connors, Fabian, Ty Harden, Frankie Avalon, and Edward Burns. Yeah, from Color Photo in Carl Place, Long Island, New York. You can also get 40 foreign and American cars for only a dollar. Yeah, so that's pretty good. You can buy a car for a dollar. Yeah, things were a lot cheaper back in 1959, weren't they? We have a house ad here for Green Lantern Showcase. First appearance of the Silver Age Green Lantern. So that's pretty historic right there. You have an ad featuring Superman here for Palisades Amusement Park in New Jersey. And
It's a coupon that you have to cut your comic book up for. So admit one to Palisades Amusement Park, you get a free ride on the Caterpillar or a free ride on the Tilt-A-Whirl. This coupon is worth 65 cents. So you, with that 65 cents you save, you can buy yourself another copy of this comic so it can stay in mint condition. Or you can sell Cloverine Salve. Yes, and you can get cash prizes for selling lots and lots of Cloverine Salve. Whenever I see one of these sales club ads in a comic, I always wonder about the kids who actually tried selling this stuff door to door. I mean, Cloverine is basically, it's still available on the market apparently. It's just petroleum jelly. It's just basically, it's Vaseline, but it's sold under a different brand name. But I can only imagine in the early 60s, these gangs of kids wandering the neighborhoods trying to sell this stuff door to door. And hey, lady, you got chapped lips? You kind of wonder if anybody ever won anything, or if they just had like a garage full of Cloverine salve that they could never get rid of. I suppose it would come in handy when they got into their teenage years. But anyway, although we have an ad by Joe Weider, the muscle builder, trainer of champions. Yeah, you have to have muscle man ads in the comic book. That's pretty standard there. And on the back cover, we have 150 Civil War soldiers for $1.49. That sounds like a pretty good deal. Actually, the artwork in this Civil War soldier ad, it looks to me like it was done by Jack Kirby. Can't say for sure, but it sure looks like it was. Now, keeping in mind, of course, that this is his older, cruder style before the sort of Lee Kirby Thor stuff that we've been covering on the show. It definitely has that look to it. But, of course, it's a real far cry from the stuff we're looking at in the Thor comics from 1968. It's amazingly different than that. All right, so that's about it for this week. Thanks very much for listening. Once again, if you want to contact the show, feel free to do so. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com, and you can also find us over on Facebook. Yeah, we have a quiet little Facebook group over there, but of course, if you want to be involved, just feel free to drop me a line. All right, with that, we're going to go ahead and knock off for now. Thanks very much for listening, and of course, we'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard.